How'd you do? Just been involved with over a dozen libertarian campaigns in 2016. Just traveled the country with Governors Gary Johnson and Bill Lowe as the campaign director of events. She's getting out there and doing things. In 2018, she served as campaign manager for Foxhall for Florida, House District 72 special election, and the campaign broke records for fundraising and media garnered. Just received a Bachelor of Arts from the University of Cincinnati in Communications and Public Relations. She lives in Alexandria, Virginia, works out of the Libertarian Party's national headquarters. In addition to managing the party's membership programs, she serves as a social media manager and in various other roles. During the recent government shutdown, with a little help from a friend, Jeff coordinated a nationwide effort of libertarian activists to move litter from 20-plus national parks. This effort resulted in some of the best media exposure the party has received for non-political campaign-related activities. Just the spring 2019 speaking engagements will give libertarians a forecast on the 2020 presidential race and how to best prepare. And I give you
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here at the Libertarian Party of Maryland Convention. I'm so pleased to be able to share my thoughts and my opinions with you, and I look forward to the next hour. I have two difficult jobs ahead of me within this next hour. The first job is to fit an hour and a half long presentation into less than an hour of time for questions. So we're going to move fast. I'm going to ask some questions of you, and if you know the answer, just go ahead and blurt it out. We won't have time for discussion and conversation during this presentation, so please save remarks until the end. The other difficult job I had ahead of me is getting us all in this room to agree on something. If you ever try to get libertarians to agree on something, you know it's not easy. So hopefully I am able to accomplish my two goals. So let me see what time it is now so I know how far along to go. Okay, so my presentation is called What's Going On. We're going to cover the 2016 election, the 2018 election, libertarian issues, as well as getting ready for 2020. Okay, I come with a warning label. My opinions are my own. I'm going to say some things that don't reflect the National Party nor any of my previous employers. So please keep that in mind as we are going along. So we're going to take it back a little bit in time and push back to the 1700s. George Washington, during his farewell address, left us some advice. He told us that political parties would ruin America. Does anyone in here agree with him? Yeah. Two political parties would ruin America? Well, I concur with that statement, and we here are trying to do what is called end the two-party system in America. That's what libertarians are trying to do. So with George Washington's advice in mind, let's move forward. Okay, so over the course of history in America, after George Washington left office, not long afterwards, starting about right here, the political parties started to form. And if you love history, you probably know this all already, but there have been many political parties that have came and gone over the course of time. It was in the late 1800s that we started seeing the two-party system emerge in 1852. Does anybody know why the two-party system has had a stronghold in America since 1852? Ballot access laws, Howard is correct. The reason why ballot access laws got started in the late 1800s was they're racially motivated and they also wanted to stop the communists. That's why they were started. And now we're fighting against ballot access laws so libertarians can appear on the ballot.
Hey, Jess.
Yes.
Also, did we not have government printed ballots until the late 19th century?
Oh, that's an answer I don't know. Does Bob know?
I think you had around 1880.
You said
that
you
could
write it on
the paper. It would be something very interesting to look into, for sure. Okay, so people are leaving the two-party system. They're coming away from the two-party system in droves. You can see in 1992, over 80% of the voters had a political party affiliation. And in 2016, the number is down significantly. In nine states, there is a plurality of independent voters. in 9 different states. That's pretty significant. These 9 states are the ones that are more of the lighter colored ones, the pink and the blue. These states have a plurality of independent voters. The ones that are in gray do not register to vote by party affiliation. If you've lived in Maryland your whole life, you may not have thought about that because in other states you don't register with a political party. Okay, so Larry Sabato of the University of Virginia Center for Politics says, being an independent is just a popular cover label for hidden partisans who are quite loyal to their hidden party. Do you agree with that statement?
No.
Okay. All right, so there are over 200 million registered voters in the United States. The ones that we know by party affiliation are listed here. This has been compiled by Richard Winger of Ballot Access News from 2018. And I think what's always surprising to people is how many more registered Democrats there are than Republicans. But look at the number of independents. It's almost the same as the number of registered Republicans. Now, notice the number of registered Libertarians, and keep in mind this is just in the states that allow for partisan registration. Does this surprise anyone? Less than 0.5% of the voters? Okay, when I've given this speech before, a lot of people think it's much lower than they had anticipated. But I think it's very important that we all know where we're at. Let's get a baseline feel for what's going on. That's what I'm talking about for the next hour, is what's going on. All right, so as the generations go by, millennials are right now registered to vote 44% independent. Every successive generation has more independent voters than the previous. You can see the two-party system in decline. Registered Democrats going down. Registered Republicans going down. Registered independents going up. But look, in 2016, voter registration kind of started really taper off and like kind of become more steady for the two-party system. I'm sure you all know why in 2016 people wanted to stick with their political party. All right, so let's talk about the history of libertarianism and the Libertarian Party. The first, we've got this. This is a map of the political systems across the world. These light blue countries have two-party systems. When you take a look at it, it's actually a lot fewer than I would expect. There are more multi-party systems, like the dark blue countries, than I initially anticipated when I first looked this up. So you see here in America, two-party system, Australia, a few other countries. All right, the history of libertarians. The first time the word libertarian is documented was in 1913 in a book by Charles Spalding. He wrote Liberty and the Great Libertarians. He wrote on John Locke, Thomas Paine, and then in 1923, H.L. Mencken described himself as a libertarian. But the word libertarian wasn't actually widely used until the 50s. So the word libertarian hasn't even been around really that long. And the records show that the word libertarian started to replace the word liberal. I'm sure you all know about classical liberalism. So let's move on to the Libertarian Party's founding. All right, what does Richard Nixon have to do with the founding of the Libertarian Party?
Well, at first, the way he was elected in 69, or I should say when he first took office in 69, he started to be a little bit more fascist with civil liberties. But certain people felt that they could deal with that. However, in the summer of 71, he imposed wage and price controls.
Exactly. Wage and price controls is it. So wage and price controls basically remove the gold standard and allow the government to impose inflation easier. This pissed off people that considered themselves to be libertarians. So a group of individuals decided to create a new political party in America devoted to defending liberty and restricting government to protect the rights of its citizens. The Libertarian Party, as we know it, was founded in 1971 in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So that brought us, I think, all of us here today in this room. And what do us here in this room have in common besides identifying as libertarians? go ahead and make some assumptions. What do you guys think? What do we have in common?
We want to be left alone.
We do want to be left alone. What else? How about, or go for it.
We don't believe that anyone has the right to initiate force or fraud in order to attain their values.
If you sign the non-aggression principle, you're a member of the party, you definitely should hopefully believe that. How about more about, instead of what we believe, but what we maybe look like outwardly?
We're
individualistic. All right, well, I will cut to the chase. Primarily, this room is composed of white males. Okay? All right, so that's when we hear it often, libertarians are always saying, why aren't there more women and minorities in the Libertarian Party? And, you know, I've thought about this a lot over the years, and I think I've came to the conclusion of why we have fewer women and minorities in our political party. And let's take a little bit more of a trip down history. Okay, so the women's suffrage movement started in the 1910s. Women wanted the right to vote. So they took to the streets, they marched, and they demanded the right to vote. Back then, the Libertarian Party did not exist. In 1955, Rosa Parks was arrested for refusing to sit in the back of a bus in Montgomery, Alabama. The Libertarian Party was not around yet. Martin Luther King, he gave the I Have a Dream speech. It was given on the March from Washington for Jobs and Freedom in 1963. 200,000 people attended this rally. Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, Peter, Paul, and Mary were singers at this rally. Back then, the Libertarian Party wasn't around yet. Vietnam War protests started in 1965 by people who believed in peace. The Libertarian Party wasn't around yet. And on May 4th, 1970, four students were killed by members of the Ohio National Guard during a Vietnam War protest. The Libertarian Party was not around yet. We can't change history, but I would assert that had the Libertarian Party existed 20, 40, 50 years earlier, this room would look a lot different than it does today. We wouldn't be able to fit in this room, nor would white males predominantly be the majority of this political party. So we want to win hearts and minds, but our founders were concerned with an economic issue. People that believe in our economic philosophy are already with us. We struggle to win people with their hearts. I wanted to talk about this some more, but we're also going to be speaking about elections. All right, so does everybody follow me so far? Okay. So John Hopkins. He was our first presidential candidate in 1972. He received less than 4,000 votes, and he was a gay male. His family does not want us to promote that he was an openly gay male, but it is the truth, and I wanted to share that with you. His running mate was Toni Nathan. She was the first woman to ever receive an electoral vote in America. Okay, does anyone know who this gentleman is right here in the middle? This guy was on Survivor, and he won a whole bunch of times on Survivor. He ran for governor of Indiana in 2012 against who is our now vice president. Yeah, so he received 4% of the vote, over 100,000 votes when he won. So Rupert is really good at winning hearts and minds. And my mom absolutely loves him on the show Survivor. And this guy, who knows who he is? Gary Johnson. Gary ran in 2012 for president, 2016 for president, and 2018 he ran for U.S. Senate. Speaking of Gary Johnson, let's go ahead and talk about 2016. The 2016 election cycle, which wasn't even that long ago. The results, these five gentlemen ran for president and were on the debate stage at the Libertarian National Convention in Orlando. Who was there? A few people were with us then? Okay. So the results of what they received in the final ballot are above. Let's take a look at when these individuals announced that they were running for president. Anyone in this room concerned about who's going to be running for president in 2020 as a Libertarian? So Gary Johnson, who received our nomination, didn't even announce until that same year. So I wanted to bring this up because if you are concerned who is going to be running for president, remember and keep in mind, our process starts later than the two-party system. We are a much later process type of political party. Hopefully we'll get to the day where we start announcing earlier and getting our things in motion sooner rather than later, but I just wanted to make sure you know that that you don't need to necessarily announce like 6 years in advance to get our nomination. Okay, the vice presidential race. Larry Sharp and Bill Weld were the final ballot of the vice presidential ticket. You can see the final result of that final ballot here. And Larry was about 30 votes away from receiving, from winning that that nomination. So in 2016, 3 weeks before the national convention, there's a lot going on. Presidential races, the chair's race, a lot was happening. But I didn't even know who was running for vice president 3 weeks before our national convention. And I had to vote on this. I found it kind of sad that I didn't know that kind of knowledge. And who knew going into the national convention, those of you that went, who you were voting for a month out? Okay. Who knew that Bill Weld was running for vice president a month out? Okay. So few people knew that information. I didn't know that Governor Weld was running for vice president until a week in advance. This was in February of 2016. Remember I told you Gary Johnson announced he was running for president in January of 2016? This was an interview with Bill Weld regarding who he was going to be supporting. This was late February 2016. He said, you know, if he settles down, yeah, said Weld, who is backing Ohio Governor Kasich in the GOP primary when asked on Boston Herald Radio whether he would support Trump in the fall. But I also have a long relationship with Mrs. Clinton, Hillary Clinton, so I'd like to see how the campaign unfolds there, which is the way I say how Donald Trump evolves as a candidate. So February 2016, Gary Johnson was publicly announced that he was running for president, and Bill Weld didn't know if he was supporting Donald Trump, John Kasich, or Hillary Clinton. This was publicly available information that you could have known at the time, but I didn't pick it up until a few months ago. So let's flash forward to election November 2016.
Let me just say, as Massachusetts resident, coming up here 10 years from in public life there, I'm on a different place ideologically from you in the number line, but I have a lot of respect for your career and for your thoughtfulness. And I think that you're a deep thinker and a clear thinker on these things. I have a lot of respect for you. Hope you don't mind. I can't imagine that you wouldn't tell a person in North Carolina or Ohio to vote for Hillary Clinton if the choice they were making was between giving the Libertarian Party 5% or potentially electing Donald Trump. Because you guys don't have a chance against Donald Trump, and she does, and if they vote for you, you're helping, they would be helping to elect Donald Trump. The Libertarian Party hasn't treated you great if they're putting out statements that you disagree with over your own name. Even now, it's one week before the election. I can't imagine that your loyalty to them is stronger than your fear of Trump as president.
Well, I'm here vouching for Mrs. Clinton, and I think it's high time somebody did, and I'm doing it based on my personal experience with her, and I think she's deserves to have people vouch for her other than members of the Democratic National Committee, so I care to do that.
You've had a fascinating career, and I really appreciate your time spending talking to you.
Thank you.
Governor Bill Weld, the vice presidential nominee of the Libertarian ticket. That was the most interesting political conversation I've had about this election in months. Thank you.
So the last time I played this clip, it was a room full of people who had just eaten their dinner, and I had a video of their reaction, the crowd reaction, because it was incredible. Everyone was just like, the look on their face was awful. Hillary Clinton. Governor Bill Weld vouched for Hillary Clinton. And this is the scene on election night. Hillary Clinton held her election night party at the Jacob Javits Center in Manhattan under what was a literal glass feeling. On November 6th, 7th, 2016, Donald Trump won the presidency, leaving many people, myself included, completely flabbergasted. Despite the polls that were in Hillary Clinton's favor, some of them were saying she had a 99% chance of winning, Donald Trump swept the Electoral College. How did this happen? Well, when you do the math, 77,000 votes between Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania ultimately gave Donald Trump the Electoral College, giving him the presidency. Fast forward. Go back to the Electoral College now. Did everyone see it?
Yeah.
We remember it.
Yeah.
All too well.
Okay, so Donald Trump significantly received the Electoral College, but it's 77,000 votes. And remember, Hillary Clinton received the popular vote. Donald Trump was also significantly out-fundraised. The Hillary Clinton campaign raised $1.4 billion, which was a lot of money. I actually thought that this 2016 election was an elaborate hoax. I thought that Donald Trump was the nominee in order to give the election to Hillary Clinton because it didn't even seem like he was interested in being the president. So I recently watched a Michael Moore documentary called Fahrenheit 11/9. Talked about Donald Trump, how he won the presidency, and what he suggests is that establishment politicians for many years have been forgetting about Americans. And he had one really good example, I think, of how a politician completely forgot about average Americans. And I've got another video for you. Watch him as he sips this water.
Hey, you know, generally, I have not been doing any stunts here, but, you know. And this used a filter. The water around the table. It was Sprint water that was filtered, and it just confirms what we know scientifically, which is that if you're using a filter, if you're installing it, then Flint water at this point.
In Flint, Michigan, individuals were drinking, bathing, using water laced with lead, and here on this stage, Barack Obama just put it up to his mouth and didn't even take a drink. Another time that day, he did the same exact thing. This is a prime example of how politicians were neglecting the average American. And so Americans were tired of establishment, and people decided to vote for Donald Trump. So Bill Weld's fears came true. This picture here is from election night at the his election night party. And obviously, his supporters were very happy. Here is a picture from the election night party for the Libertarian Party in Albuquerque, New Mexico. This is the head of Gary Johnson. That is his beautiful mother right there. And that's me. I was Gary's advance lady, and I planned that party that night. We had a wonderful time. I think a lot of us knew we weren't going to win. We were disappointed in the results, but we were just having a great time in Albuquerque and celebrating the election. So the 2016 strategy, how many of you were involved with Gary Johnson's campaign? A few individuals in here. The campaign strategy was to invoke the 12th Amendment by preventing all of the candidates from receiving 270 electoral votes and throwing the election to the House of Representatives. That was the campaign strategy. It was not successful. There were system failures, and I'll go over just a couple of them. The strategy changed very often. The states that were in play were every week a different state. The campaign started too late. After the election in 2016 of receiving the nomination, the campaign kind of like went into a lull for a couple months, but it should have been rocking and rolling right out of the convention. We attempted ground game. However, ground game is very significant. It costs a lot of money, and it's very difficult to deploy. The what is Aleppo moment? Well, Gary Johnson was going from California to New York, back and forth, doing interviews. Really, what the campaign should have had him do is just be in a studio and go into every station from wherever he was right then, rather than zigzagging him across the country. Running for president is not easy. I don't know if you all know that, but it's a tough job, and you get really tired. So If Gary Johnson would have had maybe some more sleep and not gone from California to New York that night, he may have been a little bit more on his A game. Where did the campaign get it right? Who's here because of the 2016 election? Couple people. A few people are here because of 2016. You got inspired by 2016's election in order to be here a few years later. People loved Gary Johnson. He's a lovable guy, and they gave him hope. We gave libertarians, gave people a choice outside of the two-party system, and brought in people who are now leaders in their libertarian parties, local parties, and state parties. So here's the election results. As you can see, we've received close to about 4.5 million votes in 2016. The Libertarian Party's voter registration is less than 1% of our voting electorate. Okay, and here's a quick map. You can see where the campaign did the best. It's the dark blue states. Those are going to be the Great Plains, Maine, and New Hampshire were targeted states by the campaign, so we obviously did better there, but you can see where the campaign was least successful, and you should use these results in planning for 2020. All right, we talked a little bit, as Sue mentioned, that I managed a campaign in 2018 during a special election, and I shared with libertarians everywhere something about the blue wave. Because the blue wave in 2018 came and crushed me on February 13th on election night for this campaign I managed. When this special election happened, because the Republican state legislator was bullied by her Republican party into complying with their demands, and she said no and quit. So we as libertarians thought this is a perfect time for us to jump in. This is going to be a sleepy special election. 10% of the voting turnout is probably what it's going to be. And we thought we're going to try to get someone elected as state legislator. And that just didn't happen. And I'll be very brief and tell you why. The blue wave really became a significant force in special elections in 2018. The left figured out how to move resources into red districts and win, and they did it. I told you that the voter turnout we thought would be 10%, it was 36%. There was only one thing on the ballot, and that was this election, and 36% of the voters turned out for this election. That's an insane amount of people for a special election. Crazy. Allison did a really wonderful job. That's her in the televised debate. I mean, this campaign, we got the only newspaper endorsement out of the entire race. We were really rocking and rolling and hoping for at least 15% of the vote. And when it came down to it on election night, we received 3% of the vote. The next special election that we had a libertarian in was Pennsylvania's Congressional District 18. That was Connor Lamb and Rick Saccone. Drew Gray Miller was the libertarian, and he did the best that he could with his resources in running for office. And he knew he wasn't going to win, but he thought he would at least cover the spread. He tweeted out before the day of the election he's going to be the most hated man in America, and it picked up headlines everywhere because he covered the spread. That district should have gone to the Republicans, but the Democrats once again figured out how to win elections, and Connor Lamb ended up winning that election. Okay, so, all right.
I want to thank you all so incredibly much for this moment. This victory smile from each and every single person in this room. Yeah. And this room won this seat. Won that seat. Every person out here this evening changed America tonight. Community.
June 26th in 2018. Libertarians were concerned with, is Nick Starbuck or Joshua Smith going to be the chair of the national committee? Meanwhile, a socialist won her primary in New York. She defeated a 10-term incumbent, the fourth most powerful Democrat in Congress. And how did she do it? There's her worn-out shoes right there. But she also had help from her friends. The people from the Bernie Sanders campaign were, and I want to try to kind of like spell this out to you guys if you're not paying attention to what's happening on the left. The socialists are evolving, and they're learning how to win elections, guys. And I want to share this with you because libertarians need to do the exact same thing. So, she worked hard. I'm sure you all know who Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is. She's getting a lot of headlines. This guy, though, here, you may not know who he is. His name is Saikat Chakrabarty. He's her chief of staff. He is a Harvard graduate with a degree in computer science, and he has a background in Wall Street and Silicon Valley startups. The guy knows technology, and he knows how to get things done. He worked on the Bernie Sanders campaign, and after Bernie Sanders lost the primary to Hillary Clinton, he founded two organizations called Brand New Congress and Justice Democrats. The goals of these organizations were transformative politics, bringing power back to people and not to politicians. They are responsible for individuals like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez winning elections, and they focus on gentrifying communities in the Bronx and Queens in order to turn out votes for AOC. AOC was nominated by her little brother to run for office because they put out a call for nominations. What an interesting concept, rather than asking people to run, nominating people to run. They were able to get 7 members of Congress elected this last cycle, and they're running on issues like Medicare for All, the Green New Deal, and racial justice. Larry Sharp was giving this presentation after 2016, where he said, libertarians need to just elect one member to Congress, and it will change everything. Electing one socialist to Congress changed everything because now she's dominating the news cycle.
Excuse me, wait.
Yeah.
Didn't just the ethnic makeup of that district change, and that's the reason she won? She beat a white man in a district that had become Spanish warrior.
And this, Joe Crawley, her opponent, barely spent any time in the district.
Right.
She knocked on the doors. She showed up her face. He was in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. having dinners and meeting with lobbyists and filling his pockets. All right. Let's watch her campaign ad. Sorry about my technical
difficulties.
Yes,
you do.
I don't know.
I do.
Yeah, it's a German stuff.
Women like me aren't supposed to run for office. I wasn't born to a wealthy or powerful family. Mother from Puerto Rico, back in the South Bronx. I was born in a place where your zip code determines your destiny. My name is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I'm an educator, an organizer, a working class New Yorker. I've worked with expectant mothers, I've waited tables, and led classrooms. And going into politics wasn't in the plan. But after 20 years of the same representation, we have to ask, who has New York been changing for? Every day gets harder for working families like mine to get by. The rent gets higher, healthcare covers less, and our income stays the same. It's clear that these changes haven't been for us, and we deserve a champion. It's time to fight for the New York that working families can afford. That's why I'm running for Congress. This race is about people versus money. We've got people, they've got money. It's time we acknowledge that not all Democrats are the same, that Democrats receive corporate money, profits on foreclosure, doesn't live here, doesn't send kids to our schools, doesn't drink our water or breathe our air, cannot possibly represent us. What the Bronson Queens need is Medicare for all, tuition for public college, a federal job guarantee, and criminal justice reform. We can do it now. It doesn't take 100 years to do this. It takes political courage. A New York for the many is possible. It's time for one of us. Vote for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on June 26th.
This commercial, when I watched it, I thought cost $100,000. When I started researching into it, I found it was created by a ragtag group of socialists. The quality is amazing. Up until she says Medicare for all, this could be a person for any party. This could be a libertarian. Up until she said the word Medicare for all. That ad that you just watched is powerful. It's invoking. And it gives you kind of a, like you want to feel a part of it and connected to something. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez went from Alexandria from the Bronx to the cover of Time magazine last week. She's literally shaping the future of politics, and I think she's going to be one of the most influential key players in the 2020 election. Libertarians can learn from this, and we can replicate what it is that the socialists are doing to win elections, and we better figure it out pretty fast. So I talked about the blue wave, how it crushed me on February 13th. 116 million Americans turned out to vote in 2018 in the election, in the general. If you look at the numbers behind me, between Democrats and Republicans, the partisan vote was separated by 9 million votes. I'm going to move out of the way so everyone can see. The divide here between Democrats and Republicans is the largest partisan divide of any midterm in history. In 2018, Democrats and Republicans locked in their political parties and stuck their heels in deep. So we got to move forward from 2018, and we got to learn a few lessons. I told you the left is completely changing how they're doing elections. These organizations right here, if you sign up for their emailing list, you can start studying them and seeing what they're putting out and how they are doing, how they are going about and using resources to win their elections. Okay, so I'm going to keep going. Here is the turnout. You can see in 2018, it was the highest turnout ever for a midterm election. 2016 actually wasn't even that high of a turnout year for a presidential race. All right, let's talk about libertarians now. So in 2018, libertarians received unprecedented candidate support from LTHQ. Kara Scholz is our candidate recruiting specialist. She works a lot with your state chair. She provided training and materials for candidates. We ran 833 people for office in 2018, and 28 libertarians were elected in 2018. That's 28 out of 833. That's a lot of individuals that did not win their elections, but I'm very glad these people won. Now, when you look at who won their elections, Soil and Water Conservation District, Township Trustee, City Council, School Board. That's how libertarians won in 2018. In total, we elected 55 individuals to public office in 2018, and in 2019, we've already elected 9 people to public office. All right, I've got some bad news, guys. Some individuals left their political parties in 2017, 2018, and they... We have Laura Epke, state senator from Nebraska, Caleb Dyer, Joseph Stolkoff, and Brandon Finney in New Hampshire. New Hampshire has 400 representatives in their state legislature. We had 3 of them for a while. And Aubrey Dunn Sr., land commissioner of New Mexico. These 5 individuals left their political party to join the Libertarian Party. Aubrey Dunn did not seek re-election. Caleb Dyer got 0.8% of the vote, Brandon Finney got 10% of the vote, Joseph Stolkoff did not seek re-election, and Laura Epke got a heartbreaking less than 44% of the vote. Our defectors, we weren't able to retain them. This sends a bad message to anyone who's considering leaving their political party and joining the Libertarian Party if they're already an elected official. So let's look at some election results from 2018. Gary Johnson ended up breaking our record for U.S. Senator. He received about 15% of the vote in a three-way race. Keep in mind, he ran for U.S. Senate in New Mexico, where he was the former two-term governor. He broke Carla Howell of Massachusetts, her previous record of about 12%. Carla, when she ran for U.S. Senate in 2008, came within one percentage point of beating the Republican in Massachusetts.
All I saw about that from the campaign was on social media,
yeah.
But it just seemed that Gary Johnson wasn't performing. Like, was he trying to run? I mean,
he was definitely trying to run, but remember how I talked about 2016, there were issues with the campaign, such as getting started too late? Oh, it happened once again in 2018, you know, getting started too late. That campaign, had it started earlier, could have had much more significant of a force.
Thank you.
I would also throw in the regarding Laura that the Nebraska Republicans threw the kitchen sink at her. The governor is a billionaire. I think he was the founder of E-Trade America or something like that. He's a co-owner of the White Sox, and they made it clear they wanted Edke out of there, and they were successful. But I will say it took a lot of money and boots on the ground to get rid of her.
Okay, and so election results. After Gary Johnson, the next best performing libertarian was Lucy Brenton in Indiana. She received 4.4% of the vote, and she did a very good job with her campaign. Now let's switch over to the U.S. House, leaving the Senate. And the best performing person running for U.S. House was Jeffrey Blunt in Texas. In District 20, he ran in a two-way race. He really didn't campaign, but he got close to 20% of the vote. So it just goes to show, sometimes libertarians are the only other option on the ballot, and you can actually receive a very, very large total of votes just by having your name on the ballot. These seven individuals right here received 100% of the vote in their district. They were the only option on the ballot, libertarians actually providing candidates when the two other parties did not. We're still on 2018 election results. Who knows who this guy is?
Apollo.
Yes, Apollo, this is my coworker. He's our own Psi-Thought, Chakra Bharti. Maybe he didn't go to Harvard and might not have a Silicon Valley startup experience, but he knows elections. Apollo was hired by the LP with the goal in mind to elect people to state legislator races. Apollo analyzed every single state legislator race, every state district in all of America. That's over 7,000 districts. He was looking for prime opportunities for libertarians and where they could run. He ended up coming up with this slate of individuals. Here are five people that were running for state legislator races. And we spent a lot of time analyzing how these performed, but we're going to talk mostly all about Bethany for the next minute. Bethany in Wyoming was a dynamic candidate. You could say her own Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of 2018. She ended up receiving 49.2% of the vote. She was doing canvassing. She broke her leg during the election while she was doing roller derby and ended up going on wheelchair and crutches door to door, knocking every single voting house in her district at least two times.
Wow.
Let me tell you a little bit more about Bethany. She ran against the House Majority Leader in Wyoming. He's been in his seat since 2000. He was not even in the district while the election cycle was going on. He was, I think, in Mexico. Bethany is a fifth-generation Wyoming woman. She's been part of her community for her entire life. Like, she knows the people at the grocery store, you know, someone who's really grown up in this area. She received endorsements from the majority of the city council and from the largest city that was in her district. She received an endorsement from the county attorney and a former mayor. I mean, these things are all leading up to be what would have been a very dynamic election, and it certainly was. On the night of the election, the newspaper had already called the election for Bethany. And then the people counting the ballots came up with a bag of 500 absentee votes that, when doing the math afterwards, don't match up with the patterns of the voting. You could say perhaps this election was stolen from us. We won't really ever know the full details, but Bethany decided not to contest the election results and decided to move forward, and she's going to be running for office hopefully again in the future. But we have not had a libertarian elected to state legislator seats since the 1980s. So this would have been, if she had won, something that is recent history, hasn't been done in my lifetime. There's another picture of Bethany right there. She is in a wheelchair, sign waving during her election cycle. Jeff Hewitt, I want to talk up this guy. He is right now our top person elected to public office in Riverside County, California. He is a county supervisor. This county has 2.4 million people in it. That's a lot of human beings that have a libertarian on their county board.
Is that county supervisor, is that equivalent to the county council or what?
Yeah.
Position?
Yep.
Or was that a partisan race?
It was not a nonpartisan race. Jeff received about 52% of the vote. He was out fundraised 2-1. How did Jeff do this? He started off by running local. He ran for office and was the mayor of a small town called Calamasa, Florida. And the most libertarian thing he was able to do, he chose his battles. He picked and chose. What he decided to do with his time in office was to do pension reforms for the fire department. So he took them away from unfunded liabilities to having a pension system where you pay into your pension rather than you get this, you know, money from afterwards. I didn't explain that too well, but hopefully y'all followed me. Now that he is on the county board, Jeff is a very powerful influencer. The pension board was very upset with him for what he did with Calamasa's fire department. Now in Riverside County, there's 101 fire departments that are under this county, and he's going to do it again. And so now they kind of have to kiss his ass when before they hated him. So he credits his win. How Jeff Hewitt was able to win, even though he's outraged 2-1, he used field canvassers from Young Americans for Liberty Went Out the Door program and his campaign manager, Boomer Shannon. So Boomer is a very highly skilled libertarian campaign operative. The word operative is something I would love to hear more of in the Libertarian Party. We have very few people who have dedicated their lives to winning elections. So we need to revolutionize. Take a, I guess, a little lesson from the socialists on how to revolutionize our campaign. Okay, so where are we today? These numbers may have changed a little bit since last time, but we have about 180 people elected to public office. 56 are elected to partisan offices, 124 are elected to nonpartisan offices. Clearly, this indicates if you're looking to get elected to public office, nonpartisan races are the most compelling ones to choose. So here's some interesting news. We have 12 mayors. Did anyone know that besides Bob? Bob gave me the status. 60,000 people can say they have a libertarian mayor. All right, let's talk about 2020. 2020 madness is underway. Turn on the news and it's like election cycle after all that. It's getting really overwhelming for me personally. Now that we have a internet troll as the president, sorry if anyone likes Donald Trump, all rules are kind of out the window. Traditional politics as we know it is over, and Donald Trump's campaign promise was to build a wall, and who was going to pay for it?
Mexico.
If we do get a wall, who's going to pay for it?
We are idle children.
He had proposed radical campaign promises that never would come true. And now that Donald Trump has proposed radical campaign plans like Mexico paying for walls, the left is coming out with their own radical campaign plans like Medicare for all, and reparations are something that's starting to come into the conversation. They're pushing these radical policy proposals, so 2020 is kind of going to be hilarious to watch. And the field of candidates that's coming forward is just phenomenally hilarious. There's so many people running for office, but the president is a Democrat right now. I'm going to skip over the fundraising numbers because we are short on time. But you can look up how the Democrats and the Republicans are doing with their millions and millions of dollars in the bank. Donald Trump has already raised well over $130 million for his 2020 campaign. So who's Donald Trump? Sidehat Chakrabarty. This is Brad Parscale. He is a digital communications expert, and he's like 6'8", and he is his 2020 campaign manager, but given Donald Trump's history, he probably won't be his campaign manager for long. Donald Trump is campaigning in places like my hometown of Lima, Ohio. He is right there in the tank plant where he was a month ago campaigning in Lima, Ohio, because he wants to keep his base happy. So he's going to be out on the road saying that he's campaigning on promises kept and promises delivered. Okay, so what is happening right now with conservative pundits? What are they telling voters? I have a quick clip from Glenn Beck.
What is in the last 30 seconds? Yeah. What's the antidote? That's what I wanted to ask you.
Waking up, and I don't know if there's an antidote, but I will tell you this. If the Republicans don't win in this next election, I think we are officially at the end of the country as we know it. We may not survive even if we win, but we definitely don't.
Does that mean they re-elect Donald Trump? People that maybe didn't like him, now they can see he kept a lot of his promises, most of them?
I saw that he kept his promises, and I will tell you, there is no choice this time around. We must come together.
He said the words, there is no choice. This is the same guy who in 2016 had Austin Peterson, who was running for president as a Libertarian, on his show. He had Nick Starwark, chairman of the Libertarian National Committee, on his show. And he's now telling people, you have no choice. America, it will end if we don't reelect Donald Trump in 2020. Donald Trump's going to be running on the economy, as long as the economy stays strong. He's going to be running on numbers that show that minorities are benefiting from the economy right now. Okay, this guy right here behind me, this is Tom Perez. He's the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. I had an opportunity to shake his hand about a month ago when he refused to debate me, so I can tell that story another day because I'm running close to out of time. 40% of Democrats right now say that it is not possible to like or respect someone that supports Donald Trump. This is ridiculous. We should be able to like people and respect them regardless of their political views. But this is Trump's America right now. So Tom Perez has a very tough job ahead of him with a radically progressive slate of candidates. Remember, Barack Obama and Bill Clinton were centrist Democrats. All right, so the Democrats are going to Milwaukee, Wisconsin in 2020. Remember I said Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin were the states where 77,000 votes gave Donald Trump the election. The first Democratic debate is going to be in June, hosted by CNN. I hope you tune in. I hope you watch and see what the Democrats are running on for their 2020 campaign debate series. There's a lot of people that have already qualified for the debate. The Democrats are hosting 12 debates. That's a lot of debates over the next year, but that's going to give them a lot of press coverage and give them a lot of name recognition. So there's a lot of individuals that are currently already qualified. And I'm going to give Bob the source material for this presentation as well as the PowerPoint. So if there's anything you want to go back and see, you're welcome to take a look at it. This week, Joe Biden entered the race. He raised $6.3 million on his opening day, Bernie Sanders was the presumed front runner, and now it is Joe Biden. Joe Biden has been polled since early 2019. He's been in the lead the entire time. Next was Bernie Sanders with this blue line, and the rest of the crop of everyone has came and gone. So we'll see how these individuals shake out. There's a lot of time left, and we are still we're 554 days out from the 2020 election, general election. You can see here that Jeb Bush was in the lead this time, last time around. Things change quick. So let's see. All right, I'm going to skip over a couple slides since we're running low on time and I need to wrap up. And we're going to get to the point where I want you all to get on the same page as me, and I hope I can do that. Organizing Corps 2020, the Democrats are hiring 1,500 field organizers in seven key states because they want the White House. They want the Senate, and they want to keep the House as well, the House of Representatives. They're putting forward a significant investment that hasn't been fully funded yet, but they're doing it with the hope that it will inspire their donors. They're going to be running on issues like Medicare for All. Tom Perez has said that the Democratic Party is unanimous that they are for Medicare for All. They're going to be running on minimum wage, and they're also going to be running on environmental issues. Here is a document from Swing Left, a Democratic, kind of like they funnel resources into campaigns. This is something very interesting that I think I would love to email to you so you can take a look at later. All right, the Libertarian Party in 2020. Right now, we have the best ballot access situation any third party has had at this point in the election cycle since 1914. We have 33 states plus D.C. that may have changed like by one or two states.
You're in three states that are important right now, including Maryland.
Okay, so we have some lawsuits and court battles going on at the moment. The Johnson-Wells ticket in 2016 performed better than the Green Party in every single state. LP National's top polls for 2020 and 2019. In 2019, we're running 200 local candidates with the hopes to elect at least 70 Libertarians to public office. I already told you we've elected 9 people to public office this year. We're about, like, 1/9 of the way to go. We're also looking to have 50 states plus D.C. ballot access again in 2020. We had it in 2016. We want to do that again in 2020. That's going to take significant funding. We haven't funded it fully yet, so we're going to need help with fundraising. And that's my job. This is a very non-scientific poll I put on LP National's Twitter account, and I think it's pretty interesting. I wanted to share it. I put out there, if you currently have a political party and you're considering switching to Libertarian, which party do you currently identify with? Significantly, it was Republican. People who are following us on social media that are thinking about coming to us are mostly Republicans. The Overton window. Yes.
I just want to ask a question. I've heard that we continually pull volunteers from the right, but votes from the left, from the exit polls. Do you know if that's true?
It depends on the demographic, the locality, and how that's made up.
Thanks.
So the Overton window is the way you can display an idea going from a fringe idea into social acceptance and policy. And this is where I think we can look and see Libertarian ideas. And this is where I hope you come with me as we try to get us all to agree on one thing. So things like gay marriage. Gay marriage is a Libertarian idea. Now, of course, Libertarians are for removing the state from marriage, but while we have marriage as a government entity, it should be for everyone who wants to be able to marry their significant other. Gay marriage went from a fringe idea to policy, and now it's a thing of the past since the Supreme Court approved gay marriage in 2015. Marijuana legalization. Marijuana used to be a fringe idea. In 1990, 16% of Americans supported legalization. Now it's 61%, and marijuana is winning across the country. Ranked choice voting. I see you have a document about ranked choice voting in front of you. I bet you'll be talking about it more pretty soon. Ranked choice voting is now starting to win in the ideas of voters, and it's moving into the Overton window. Sex work, decriminalization. This is an issue I didn't think would be touched by the mainstream media for many, many years, but now there's Democrats that are running for president that are now saying that sex work should be legalized. This is a Libertarian idea that is in our party platform. The free market is winning. Faster than the government can control or monopolize off of it and regulate it, the free market's winning. I get everything delivered to me via Amazon. I don't go shopping anymore. It comes to my front door. Death with dignity. Didn't the governor of Maryland just sign this into law in the past couple weeks?
I thought it was still in the Senate.
You wait till his death.
No, it did not.
No? Okay, so you guys know better than me. So the ability to end your life if you're terminally ill is an idea that is now starting to move into the Overton window. Occupational licensing reform, that is moving into the Overton window. civil asset forfeiture. The Supreme Court just had a unanimous decision, 9-0, to decrease the fines and penalties for civil asset forfeiture cases. And surprisingly enough, Democrats and Republicans had a bipartisan issue with criminal justice reform in 2019. Donald Trump signed the First Step Act into law, and now there are Democratic candidates that are running for president that are proposing the Second Step Act. David Nolan, the founder of the Libertarian Party, died in 2010, and a New York Times article was published about him. I would like to read for you what this says. Mr. Nolan had no illusions that libertarians would ever become powerful in raw votes, but he hoped the party's participation in elections would simply expose Americans to libertarian views as a means to effect change. I just went over with you a few issues that are libertarian ideas that are moving into the Overton window and becoming policy. David Nolan, when he founded the party, didn't think we'd have libertarians in the White House, but he thought our participation in U.S. elections would change things. And I think that is true. I gave our founders a hard time for founding the party after an economic policy, but I'm very glad they eventually did found the party, because it's better late than never, right? So, a few wrapping up ideas to share with you. We need to keep running for office. We need to keep participating in elections because our ideas are winning. While libertarians may not be elected to the federal legislature, we're getting elected to local offices, and our ideas are still winning. Another thing I'd like to share is leading up to 2020, we need to vet our candidates seriously. Every single delegate that has the ability to vote at our 2020 national election needs to thoroughly vet the people that are on the ballot. Can we agree on that one? All right, so how are libertarians going to end up winning? I have three suggestions. The first one is libertarians need to love each other. Libertarians are notorious for not loving each other. I put a poll on Twitter this morning that said, who do you think wants to change America more? Libertarians or socialists? Let me read to you a comment that I found a little interesting. Without a doubt, socialists are more passionate about bringing change to America. Libertarians are extremely passionate about fighting libertarians.
Yep.
We need to love each other. We need to have mutual respect and understanding, and when we disagree, let's peacefully talk about it. We don't need to call each other names or throw out insults, but have honest conversations about where we diverge on our views and have some mutual understanding. Libertarianism is a new idea to America. It's not, you know, I talked about how it wasn't even a commonly used word until the 50s. So our understanding of libertarianism is actually still developing, and I think it always will. It's never going to end. So where you are on your libertarian journey, you may be further along. Keep in mind that somebody that isn't as far along as you may just not understand it the same way you do, and you can help them, having really honest but also peaceful conversations. Okay, the second way that libertarians can win, besides love, and love is at the heart and soul of our philosophy. The second way we can win is we can take back our communities. We can run local and show how libertarian ideas succeed. Libertarian ideas aren't really that, I mean, the last time libertarianism, we had a violent, bloody revolution, right? I don't want to see people die for freedom. I want to see freedom come peacefully. So we have to take back our communities, run local, and show how we can implement our ideas at the most local level. And the third way we can win is by keep on keeping on. Our ideas are winning. Our ideas are moving into the Overton window. Americans are coming along with libertarianism, even if they don't know it yet. So we have to keep on keeping on. All right, so let's run local in 2020 and 2019. We'll hopefully have a very amazing top of the ticket that I hope Americans will be inspired to vote for, and that's it. Okay, I'm going to wrap up now. Thank you guys so much for having me. It's really nice to see you. I will be heading out soon, but I would love to hear from you if you have suggestions or ideas that you would like to speak further with me about. And thanks so much, everyone. Have a wonderful day and keep doing what you're doing.
Do you have time for one or two questions?
Of course.
Okay, so by questions, we mean questions. Do not speech and box before asking. Anybody?
Yeah.
have a quick question.
Yeah.
The media, we didn't take into account, that's like an arm of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
They hate Republicans, but they ignore libertarians. So without that, how do you get the media on your side, or is it even possible?
I have some ideas for 2020, and I hope to at least be able to give some consultation to the campaigns that are running. I want to see us use grassroots tactics, like the Ron Paul tactic, where people use signage to have signs out and do sign waving. We have to re-examine how we campaign at the national level. And I don't think the Johnson Wells campaign trying to do field canvassing was the right way to do it. They did go with a media blitz, and they really tried to focus on media, but it could have been a lot stronger. And who has cable in here? I watch cable news because I want to know what they're saying, but most people aren't even watching cable these days. So we can focus on social media. 9 out of 10 individuals in America, and I think in America, have the internet or in the world.
Most of the youth.
Yeah, young voters. We can inspire young voters to turn out.
Snapchat.
That's me. I put my chickens on our Snapchat. I think media will be a significant factor in 2020, but we're not going to be able to rely on media. We're going to have to do what the socialists are doing and figure out how we can re-engineer our own campaign. Yes.
For my own campaign, my greatest takeaway was that we libertarians, we have the best ideas, we have the best candidates, but we have got to convince both those who control the game polls to mainstream media and voters that it is not a waste of their money to donate to us, it's not a waste of your vote to support us, and it's not a waste of the time of sort of producer or editor to talk to us. That's what I see missing here. I think the big challenge for us is getting away from this perception that voting for us, even though people lean towards us, is a waste of that vote.
Very good.
Thank you, everyone.
So I'm going to keep standing right here because lunch is served.